It is Saturday, August 16th, 2014. We are broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. And ladies and gentlemen, it's time now for Geek Speak. We're through being cool. Well, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. Today, I'm Bonnie Primsch, as opposed to other days. And with me in the air room today, we have Miles Elam, a software engineer and political junkie. Hi, Miles.
Good morning.
Thanks for operating the board
Good
today.
Good morning.
There you go. We also have Alex Lias, an information security analyst.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Ben Jaffe, a web development instructor, musician, and world traveler.
Hello.
Hello. Lots to talk about today, which is sort of surprising because as far as I'm concerned, the only news is that Robin Williams has died this week.
That's how I feel about it, too.
Oh, my God. I'm surprised just how much it's kind of thrown me for a loop. And it's having an effect on tech news as well.
Yeah, it is.
Indeed, it has. Twitter is updating its handling of tragic situations like this because, well, let's be honest, the internet is not particularly mature. As if the internet were a person, they'd be a abusive, really smart 12-year-old.
It's just awful. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So in this case, it was a little authentic communication from Zelda Williams.
Yes.
Robin Williams' daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was just the crappy reaction to that.
Right. You had a whole bunch of folks on Twitter coming out of the woodwork. I mean, in fairness, there were a whole lot of people coming out saying our sympathies or our thoughts go out to you. But as with everything on the internet, you have a lot of vocal people without a filter who also feel anonymous and feel free to tell her that she was to blame for his death, to Photoshop photos of her that were not flattering.
You're understating it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the company is actually going to start taking a stronger stance on this. And when online abuse is reported on Twitter, that they're going to take efforts to cancel those accounts and to remove those messages in a timely fashion, and how to handle those policies on a social network, which is very difficult considering the size and scale of the problem.
Yeah,
well, it is.
How many tweets come through?
Yeah, I was reading earlier this week on Boing Boing. Glenn Fleischman wrote an article on apps that attempt to be aid in collaborative blocking. Because before Twitter took this step, the only other way to handle trolls was to have the people who are being trolled get together and just sort of individually block every troll,
right.
Which doesn't stop them from saying, you know, their junk to the greater world, but keeps the victim of their attacks.
Yeah, Twitter is rolling out an abuse button to make it easier for users to, because Twitter is such a crowdsourced form of information. The only effective way really to handle this is to crowdsource the abuse detection. That when those come through, that you start dealing with algorithms to say, like, yeah, this is abuse. And and then having just some basic oversight, high-level oversight from Twitter employees to be able to make a final determination.
So they're basically making the collaborative blocking easier to do by having a button right there instead of having to have a separate app.
Right.
Well, I think it's amazing they haven't already had that. I mean, most social sites have had report abuse for how long now?
I know. Well, and I think about all of just the teen suicides that happen because they're getting harassed online.
So it's good to see that.
About darn time. Yeah. So good for Twitter. Better late than never. Well, and just a tip of the hat in general to the geek that Robin Williams was, right, Ben?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was a bicycling geek, too.
Yeah, bicycling geek, big fan of all kinds of fun, geeky things like anime, Cowboy Bebop. His daughter was named Zelda for a reason.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
If you don't get the joke, that's Legend of Link. And, yeah, Legend of Zelda and
right.
Link and, yeah.
Yeah.
Video game.
The video game,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If you
didn't get the joke, you wouldn't have gotten your explanation.
Right, exactly.
Wouldn't have gotten that either.
It's so entrenched in geek culture, I don't even know where to describe it anymore.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sad that he's gone.
Yeah, me too.
All right. And what else is going on with Twitter, Ben?
Well, Twitter recently released a quarterly report, its most recent quarterly report, to the Securities and Exchange Commission, in which they said that of all of their hundreds of millions of users, 23 million are bots, as in not real people, as in computers running a social account. Computers.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah.
I'm honestly okay with
that. Well, as long as they behave better than a bratty 12-year-old.
Yes. Yeah, for the most part, yeah, they do behave better than your typical Xbox user.
Yeah, and to be clear, the difference between bots and spamming bots is huge, right? So bots can be created for all kinds of different reasons. Revenue generating, or they could collect followers that they can sell. That's not so great. Then there are some bots that mimic stereotypes and that are just kind of silly and fun. And
then there are infobots.
And there are infobots, exactly. Yeah.
For example, someone will set it up, a company will set it up or an organization will set it up to answer specific questions. So when someone puts in some information, the bot will take that information in, forward it to, you know, either a PR person or if it's not an organization, if it's just an individual person, like forwards that information on and then we'll give a canned response. Or if it's a common question, give back a personalized statement about it. Or you could have things like, you know, random joke generator, things like that. Or I've also seen one that was if you have questions about what the Unix command line is supposed to be for something, you can tweet that and it'll come back with the command line for that would be...
Which weirds me out because there's a thing called Google for that. Like, why not just search? Why do you have to say, hey, everybody, I don't know the
Cause
name
it's,
of...
Because it's fun thinking that you're getting answers from
because
people
Twitter,
if they are bots.
It can be informative to other people who are following you, I suppose.
But. Twitter also is integrated with many websites in terms of a news feed. Uh-huh. So as you put stuff into Twitter and have it come out, it makes it much easier to have that become part of the content feed on your website itself than merely looking for that information on Google. It becomes part of a public forum to...
It's a catalyst for collecting information to a particular place.
And I wonder how many of our listeners know that we are a bot. When we post GeekSpeak is now live, this story, that's a bot. That's not us copying and pasting the things all the time, right? I mean, we might do it on one social network, but sometimes it'll copy it over to other social networks.
You mean when we announce that the show's on or something?
Yeah. On our
on the Twitter feed and on the Facebook and Tumblr, I believe.
Tumblr. Yeah.
I don't even know. This is something that Lyle set up, so props to Lyle.
Yeah, right.
Partly is analytic engines too. There's, I know there's plugins for things like Splunk where you can do your own data analytics and it'll actually go and pull data off of Twitter and you can start doing mining for keywords or various topics and stuff. You can kind of feed that into general analytics for people who want to see what people are thinking about talking about on a more individual level, not just a company level.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of an interesting thing to know that there are bots everywhere. And in fact, I mean, that 23 million number I gave, 23 million bots, that's about 8.5% of Twitter's users are bots.
Which is...
That seems low, actually.
Yeah, I was about to say. Like, and my general usage of Twitter, and I use it a fair amount, is that I never really... I rarely see them. I do see them from time to time, but in general, yeah, other than the GeekSpeak one.
Well, guys, I just came back from Maryland, and I went to the American Visionary Art Museum, and they have an exhibit on right now called Human Soul and Machine, The Coming Singularity. So my question is, with the bots on Twitter, how much closer are we to the singularity?
Well,
are the bots there for the bots, or are they there for the people?
Just because there are bots doesn't mean that they're getting any smarter.
Hold on. We've covered it before, but just in case, can someone cover what the singularity is?
The singularity, the theoretical point in the maybe near future where computers get, I'm putting the word smart in air quotes, where computers get smart enough that they can create more advanced computers, which then can create more advanced computers, and then it runs away, and then you have computers creating computers, and it quickly excels the ability of humans to... understand.
Yeah.
And then the bots take over the world until Will Smith saves the day. I think that's the way the Hollywood movie script goes, right?
Until Judgment Day.
Yeah.
So that's the singularity.
Unless, as is quite possible, the computers are more moral than we are.
They might have an easier time of it because they wouldn't have the same kind of like, I don't know, should I... should I push the fat man to save the 100 other people, or do I save the person in front of me but then kill the people over there who are going to die as a result?
I don't know.
Or just assimilate them all and make them drones.
You know, these are things that have to be computed. It's very complicated. Maybe Merriam could do it. The first
Webster?
Women Fields medalist winner. This is my attempt at a segue.
All right.
To Miriam Mirzakhani.
Yes, who is a Stanford professor of mathematics, 37 years old, and she is one of the winners of the Fields Medal, which is the every 4 years math equivalent of the Nobel Prize.
And she won that thing.
Yes. A work between that connects topology, geometry, and dynamical systems. And don't ask me to explain what that means.
Smile.
You read
Go
it very
ahead.
Well, though. That's the sad thing about winning a prize at that level is no one can really explain why you won it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I work with math, and that's about all the general public will understand.
Yeah.
As on a personal note, the write-up on her I thought was very interesting. I'd highly recommend checking it out on our website once the show is over, that as an 8-year-old, she would tell herself stories about exploits of a remarkable girl and think about, well, today she became mayor, or today she did this wonderful thing. So she's always used this internal character as an inspiration for her to improve and to go forward, which is important in fields where you don't have as when you have someone who doesn't have many role models.
Right.
She invented her own.
That's pretty hot.
On her way to becoming a role model of her own.
That's pretty cool.
That's fantastic.
Wow. I guess, you know, with enough determination, you can do anything.
Yeah, and she is 37 years old, which kind of also blows out the water of once you're 30, it's all downhill. You don't make anything anymore. And she's
well,
just
thank
hitting
goodness,
her stride.
I have to say, as a person who's 44, it's nice to know.
Well, this goes along with, and even among computers in Silicon Valley, there is that ethic of saying, if you're not in your 20s, it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are striving all the time to do things harder, better, faster. World's fastest camera, Alex?
All right. Well, seems that they've come out with a camera that is 4.4 trillion frames per second.
What?
With a T. Trillion.
Yes.
So what does that come out to? What's the shutter speed on that in terms of the how long the aperture is open?
Less than 4.4 trillion of a second?
It would be 1/4.4 trillion.
I know, but is that femtoseconds? Is that picoseconds?
Never mind.
I wouldn't even know what to call that inverse.
Well, they actually call it motion picture femtophotography is what the team of researchers from the University of Tokyo are calling it, and Keio University.
Okay. Yeah. Now, this camera was created originally to actually look at chemical reactions at a very granular level, things that occur in literally the blink of an eye.
That's far less than a blink of an eye.
Well, that's 1 second you're trying to capture. I mean, they may be capturing something that is, you know, 1 or 2 seconds
sure,
that you're capturing. Sure. You're not trying to get one frame. You're actually trying to get the whole reaction itself.
And I imagine it with that fast a shutter speed, you need a lot of light.
Do you?
I'm guessing you probably get a lot from chemical reactions.
It's also a different process somewhat as well, and a very small resolution. It's only 450 by 450 pixels. Just in terms of the in a blink of an eye statement, if you were to take probably the fastest eye blink that you could possibly muster, let's say 100 milliseconds, and you were to record this and then play it back at a normal video speed, it would take somewhere on the order of 150 years for the video to play back.
If you're playing it back at 60 frames a second?
Yeah.
Wait, to
so
play
now
back?
We just have to get well, good at watching.
Well,
could
be 30 frames a second, but...
Well, I think actually that was 120 frames a second. No.
Okay.
So this is a camera...
No, 60.
Even 60 is twice as fast as your standard.
Well, no, that's not true because you have interlaced. So like 60i,
in
the letter I.
Well, the point is only bots can watch this and make sense of it. That's what I'm hearing. So yeah. Once again, the technology is amusing itself.
But while bots cannot listen in, unfortunately, our audience is the only one who's been left behind.
That's a point. By the way, we do have an audience. Hey, guys, what you're listening to is Geek Speak here on KUSP. Another good show on the station is the 7th Avenue Project, which airs at high noon on Sundays. This week, how not to be wrong. Numbers can provide extraordinary insight into the way the world works, but they're often misused and misunderstood by journalists, pundits, and even scientists. KUSP's Robert Pauly talks to mathematician Jordan Ellenberg about some of the big errors we make and how we can do better. That's the next time on the 7th Avenue Project here on KUSP. And speaking of corrections.
Yeah, right. I was thinking how not to be wrong.
I'm in the air room. I'm Bonnie Primshin. I'm in the air room with Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, and Alex Leas. And Ben, you've got a correction from last week,
Lyle and I disagreed about something, about whether or not the center of mass of the Pluto-Charon system, Charon is the moon of Pluto, is outside of either body or inside of Pluto. And I just have to say I was right.
Ha, ha, ha.
It actually lies outside of either body. So when Pluto and Charon are orbiting each other, they're actually both orbiting around a point that's not inside of either of them. Okay. Unlike, let's say, the Earth-Moon system, where the moon looks more like it's spinning around the Earth.
Okay.
Relatively fixed object. Yeah.
A relatively fixed object. Well, yeah, Pluto and Charon are both pretty darn small.
Well, so that makes sense.
Well, that makes sense to me, yeah.
They're about the same size, almost.
So not just a dwarf planet, a dwarf binary planet.
That's what people are hoping for, is that we can reclassify Pluto and Charon as dwarf planets.
Yeah.
Dwarf binary planets, yeah.
So, guys, I'm not sure which of the geek crowd was the one that first brought to our attention the fact that someone has used their kitty cat to do some hacking.
Wait, by the way, I heard this promoted,
yeah,
on Geek Speak, kitty hacking something, and I'm like, what are we talking about? This is gonna be new to
so
me.
So wasn't
too.
You is what you're saying to me?
It was not me.
This was reported to us by Greg. So thanks, Greg.
It was from Greg. Yeah. Oh, thanks, Greg. He's our honorary title geek.
So and I guess we wanted to kind of go over some of the hacking capabilities that we can use our roaming outdoor cats for.
Yeah, well, Alex,
the original autonomous drone.
Huh? Yes.
Yeah.
Right, hey, why build the robotics when it's already right there?
So let's explain what the general concept is. There's putting a specialized collar on your cat and sending your cat out into the neighborhood, and then collar collects information about...
Pretty much about wireless devices.
What's out there? What networks are out there?
Exactly. I mean, there's a couple of ways you can actually go about using this. One way you could do it is to actually have the Wi-Fi pay attention and listen for what networks your device is looking for, and then broadcast and say, hey, I'm that network, and your device will automatically connect to it. So that's one way where you can actually then intercept some traffic where they may be, you know, your email may be trying to connect to you, to the server. Not hard to go and simulate being whatever computer out on the network that it's trying to connect to, and then capture your credentials and all sorts of stuff.
Okay, so what does this mean for users? All those times you set up your laptop or your phone to say automatically connect up to a wireless network if it's free without a password?
Yeah,
there can be issues with that.
Yeah.
just to mention, you work in security, so you're thinking about this kind of stuff all the time.
And he's also a lot more paranoid than the rest of us.
Of course.
Which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
Those things sound related to me.
And now next time somebody walks and sees a cat walking down the street, they're going to be turning their phone off.
Yeah. Oh, no, kitty cat.
So wait, so does the cat set up this hacking network, or is it
No, this would be a person.
So then. Is it more like a hacking device attached to a kitty cat?
Yes.
Rather than
it's basically in their collar, you end up having a Wi-Fi, I guess a receiver, transmitter, whatever the...
It depends on what you're trying to do, whether you're setting up an AP or if you're setting up
That's true. So you'd have your Wi-Fi device set up in the collar. Another thing you can actually do is not just go and intercept devices, but when devices are saying they're looking for a particular network, they include certain basic information about the device, including the MAC ID. Which is a unique ID assigned to pretty much any device on the network. The theory being that it's unique worldwide. So you can identify my phone from your phone, from the laptop from some computer over in China.
So if I were some evil hacker with an evil hacker kitty, because they always have hacker kitties.
Yes.
And kitties are evil.
I could figure out, my cat has encountered Alex's phone before, potentially, if I made a little...
You tie that with geolocation and logging, and I can then track where I keep seeing your phone appear.
Ooh, that's... Okay, I
but
see.
It's only good for, I guess, your immediate neighborhood or for cats that roam.
Yeah. Now, kitties are...
This sounds like a localized hack.
Kitties are a little less predictable in what you can control, but it is very hidden.
Yeah, it does make me think about a new 25-cent idea, which is you attach a whole bunch of little tiny AP or repeaters, rather, wire repeaters to a whole bunch of cats.
Yeah.
And that becomes this wireless mesh internet network.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So, and you get more internet access the nicer you are to the cats in terms of them coming to get food.
Internet for all.
Except you can't be too nice, because if they all come to you...
Then you don't have a mesh network anymore.
Right.
You've got
a big concentration of no connection to it.
This requires the sort of standoffish personality of the cat to really work.
Yes.
Well, okay, so I guess we're closer to the kitty singularity also now.
Oh, that's
Now, Alex, you came back from DEF CON with all kinds of ideas and
DEF CON's a security conference.
Yes, yeah. DEF CON was basically kind of probably one of the most well-known hacker conferences. Started off literally just being a bunch of hackers with a common interest and wanting to talk about how they do certain things of breaking into systems and all.
And DEF CON referring to the World War II era, Cold War era, this is how close we are to World War III.
You know, I've heard mixed things. I also heard just because it's DEF just being sequenced in the letters, and that sounds like the next step of what to do. I've heard both. So, DEF CON, they kind of go over, they talk about just vulnerabilities people have found. This year, there was actually a huge focus on how hacking can interact with our physical world. So there's a lot of topics on hacking cars, on actually speaking of Wi-Fi surveillance, there was one talk I went to that was talking about using your drones. The quadcopter drones.
Yeah, I bet.
And you could put your Wi-Fi signal, adapter on there. You can have your GPS connected to it, and you can have it be autonomous and flying around. One guy was saying, when you add a camera to that, you can do some facial recognition in a crowd, and then you can also then detect what Wi-Fi signals you're actually seeing, what MAC addresses you're seeing for devices, and after people are moving around and through the crowd, you can start identifying what face ties to what phone.
That's not
creepy
at all.
So then you can easily track people by their phone.
Wow.
Jeez, gosh. So that'd be like a peer-to-peer surveillance,
basically. Yeah, sort of. Peer-to-peer being that the drone is a peer. you could do the same thing with device in your pocket. Just walk through a crowd. You can start detecting what devices are there. Stores already do that.
Yeah.
They're tracking.
So they know to advertise directly to your phone,
They know to advertise if they correlate your phone ID to your email address. They know how to spam you appropriately.
Appropriately. That's so. Glad that word's in there.
There's attempts that are being made to try and thwart that effort. Even Apple, their next iOS version, is going to be randomizing the MAC address when it's doing that broadcast for, where's my Wi-Fi?
Until they connect.
Then they standardize.
So basically saying, hey, I need to connect. I'm looking for networks. Are you available? I am Joe Schmo. And just, not saying that, hey, I'm Ben Jaffe until the user actually decides, yes, I do want to connect to them.
Yeah.
Then it's okay to share what MAC address I have.
Can we talk about the sort of fascinating topics covered at DEF CON and ethics?
Ethics?
is that a conversation in the community?
Well, there's a few terms that are used. There is your white hat, which is the person who essentially is all about trying to do good.
Yeah.
There is your black hat, which is on the other
end
spectrum
of that
ethical range there.
The ones who sell credit card numbers to Russian mobsters.
Yeah, and then there's the gray hat, which is kind of that in-between world where they're curious about breaking things, and they actually want to figure out, okay, what can I do to break things?
Yeah.
And the white hats are as well. They just don't have necessarily the same boundaries that white hat would have.
The white hats usually contact the companies and either negotiate permission or just try to do an advisory as soon as possible, the gray hats will be like, oh, I wonder how far I can go.
Yeah, and gray hats are, I guess, don't pay attention to the legal implications as much. Or they do, and they choose to cross mm-hmm. that boundary. White hats mm-hmm. like to stay clear of that boundary.
Yeah,
So they don't get in trouble with the law. I mean, there's gray everywhere in there.
Yeah,
so
there's mm-hmm. a continuum.
Yeah, it all depends on how somebody chooses to interpret a law and go after a mm-hmm. security researcher, which has happened.
And some of these technologies and ways that we're using them are so new, the morality or ethics hasn't really been defined yet. And
or
so
legality.
That makes it even harder to deal with, like, what is in the right.
Right, yeah.
But one thing I've noticed is, I mean, over the last 22 years or so, and not that I've been going to DEF CON from that point, but I do know somebody who has been going for 21 years.
Wow.
And the view of ethics has largely been to try and get this information out, because the view has been, if only the bad guys know it, then
okay.
what good is it doing?
So
one example
good
is
happens
cars.
With transparency.
Right, okay. right, exactly. Okay. And when you look at all the new features that are happening in cars now yeah. with your Bluetooth and all this, well, they've been looking at that too. And one thing they've realized is auto manufacturers are not putting a whole lot of thought into what can happen. Your car can park itself now. That means that your computer can control your steering and the power to your car.
Yeah. And the brakes.
Uh-huh. And the brakes. And, I mean, pretty much they can do what they need to with your car.
Okay. So if a person could hack into that system, then
it's been done.
Someone else. Oh, what?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. What they found is that the car manufacturers are, I'll put my opinion on it, or taking yeah. shortcuts
okay.
In designing the electronics. And the connection between the buses, like for your wireless, will be fairly directly connected to the main bus that actually connects to the same controller that drives your steering wheel or the power to the car or the brakes.
Okay.
And because
so it's
of
easier
that,
to manufacture.
It's easy to get in through the Bluetooth.
And then easy to hack.
And then go through and hack. And they've actually gone through and done this where they hack in and can trigger the brakes for a car or make it not trigger when it's supposed
but
to.
But what you're saying is that people have done tests and found that it's possible.
Yes, usually university
not
researchers.
Not real life
so. Yes, this has been research. Okay. But
okay.
The thing is, it's possible.
Yeah,
right. This comes from the culture in auto manufacture being very different. Software development, which is really what we're talking about here, mm-hmm. not just the hardware, but the software that interacts with it, is a very recent addition to the auto industry. Mm-hmm. They've mostly yeah. been just hardware ASICs and things that have been contained within the system. And the practices that have come about in software development, whether it be penetration testing or the like, just haven't migrated over yet. And,
right.
Because the culture wasn't there, you had people didn't necessarily know that it was something to watch out for.
Right.
The lessons that we all learned in the software industry from back in the day with using Outlook mm-hmm. on Microsoft Windows and sending an attachment mm-hmm. And the fact that some random person could send an attachment and it could take down a company
yeah.
was something that we learned in the software industry the hard way 20 years ago.
Okay, yeah. So this testing, is that what's meant by hacking altruism
well,
then?
Sort of. Basically, it's taking all the hacking that's being done, and this is something we've seen in the security industry or in general software industry, that you have vulnerabilities that have been in, say, Windows or any of the software we use, Adobe products, I mean, Java, all sorts of software has vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Companies were not responding. They were not making changes, even if they were being told, hey, there's this problem in your software. They're ignoring it because yeah. they didn't want to put the time into it.
Because time to market was the most important.
Right. And what ended up having to happen was eventually the hackers who knew about these vulnerabilities and those who tried to disclose them responsibly to the company were getting no response.
Yeah.
So essentially it's come out and say, tell the company, here's your vulnerability, and if you don't address this in a certain period of time, this information will be made public.
Okay.
And that put the pressure on. Now companies are far more responsive. I mean, you mm-hmm. see yeah. patches coming out for Windows every single month.
Right.
I mean, all the software has this constant regular patching. That wasn't happening until they had the pressure put on them.
So that's not just to annoy end users who have to update all the time. It's about making sure that the security...
Making things secure. Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
by pointing out the flaws, and now they're going crossing the boundaries outside of just software. Well, outside of our traditional computer software,
right,
and saying, hey, this same stuff exists in your car.
Right.
Okay. Why aren't you guys fixing this?
Okay. So the hope is that by using the same tactics, hackers can encourage greater security in our cars so that they don't get taken over by black hats.
And what's interesting is that the reaction has been, and still continues to be, well, you shouldn't be doing that. Stop it. And they'll make laws to actually make it illegal for people to do that sort of thing.
But that doesn't actually stop people necessarily.
No, it won't stop the people who don't care about the law.
Right, yeah. Which would be the people who are doing this sort of thing, I would think, in the first place.
So it's better to actually have the people doing the research and telling the car companies. And if the car companies don't do anything, put the pressure on them by making it public.
Yeah. And so for you, Alex, going to DEF CON this year, was that kind of the highlight, is learning about how hacking and security issues are applying to our Internet of Things?
Internet of Things is probably the most over. Actually, I think Gartner actually just recently declared Internet of Things being
the
most
perfect
hyped
storm
term currently and has actually just reached its peak.
All right. I'll stop using it.
We are peak IoT.
I'll look out of the box.
Internet
using
of
terms.
Stuff. That works better.
Yes. Okay. It is interesting just learning about all the things that you can do. And DEF CON is ranging. I mean, it's not just about computer software. They're about hardware hacking. They teach people electronics. They have a whole section set up just for kids.
Uh-huh.
So people can bring their kids to DEF CON now, and they teach their kids how to do electronics, how to do...
Okay.
It's like, you know, the heavy tech version of Maker's Faire.
Okay,
in
got
a lot
it.
Of ways.
Yeah. Love it.
With a hacker twist.
Yeah, the best defense is not just trying to make sure something doesn't happen, because it's always going to leak out. If someone has especially a financial incentive to do bad, they're going to.
Mm-hmm.
The best defense is to have people learn about it and understand the problem better. And that's what that brings in. That's great.
Yep. Well, thanks for that update on things happening at DEF CON. Lots more to talk about here on Geek Speak. When we come back, we'll talk about hemp fibers being better than graphene, how miserable Comcast is, and what's going on with SpaceX. It's all coming up here on Geek Speak. It's Geek Speak here on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Primshin, the host chair with Miles Elam, Ben Jaffe, and Alex Slias. And Alex, what's that thing on your head?
the my band?
Your headband.
Yeah, what is that?
It's kind of a little thin to be a stylist headband.
No, it's not Google Glass. It's
yeah, it doesn't look
no
like glass
in front of the eye.
But you're a security researcher. But it's a little too narrow to be aluminum foil.
Yeah, it's not quite the same. It actually doesn't block my mind from being read. It allows me to read my mind.
Wait a minute.
It allows you to read your mind.
That's right.
You
can't read my mind. I can read on my own mind.
Do you have problems with this without that device?
am I thinking?
I don't know. Can you read your own mind?
Why do you need a thing
define
to
read?
Your own mind? I don't get it.
Well, okay, so what is that thing? It kind of looks like sunglasses.
It's actually
but
a small
lenses.
Little personal EEG.
EEG,
electroencephalogram.
So it measures your body signals.
Brainwaves.
Brainwaves.
Basically, it's measuring, technically, I think it's measuring the magnetic. Magnetic field created by the electrical impulse in your brain. I think that's how it's
electricity,
EEG
magnetism,
works.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah, all the same.
Whatever.
It's just electromagnetism.
Once technology gets sufficiently complex, it's all magic anyway.
Yeah, so right. Tell me about the magic headband.
Well, this is similar to the type of advice that if you had to go to, say, a neurologist, and they would put this big old cap on your brain with a bunch of goop on your head to make the connection between some, I don't know what, 30 or so sensors. This is a very simplified version of it. It basically has two sensors on either side of my forehead and two sensors behind my ears, which connect to, I guess, more of the, actually against my skull, just behind the ears.
And what are you hoping to learn about yourself?
well, largely, this has got two purposes for me. One, it comes with, there's some software I can get from the company that made this, which actually was an Indiegogo startup.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, they were a Canadian-based company called Interaxon. Don't know if I should be saying that or not, but...
That's okay.
And
if someone's curious about getting their own personal...
Yeah, and there's
reader.
Other ones. There's some out there that are... There's a lot of them out there now, and there's a lot of new ones they're trying to make, because one of the things they're trying to do is make it more streamlined, so it could be something that people actually might not bother, feel too bad about wearing in public, as opposed to the ones that look like these... looks
the
like
big helmets with spikes. Yeah.
The big helmets with spikes, or you know, you look like you're a Borg drone or something.
I have to say, you don't look like too much of a dork with that on. So I think you know you're getting there.
Too much.
Well, with the headphones, that's kind of a deadly combo. But
the application that they actually have, its focus is for relaxation. So what they do is they actually measure the brain waves, and there's certain patterns within the brain waves that show when you're in a particular relaxed state.
It's like a biofeedback.
Yeah, it's actually exactly what it is. Okay. And we don't normally have insight into what our brain is actually doing. I mean, we think we do, but we know nothing about what's going on in our head. Mm-hmm. There are times that when I'm using this and I'm thinking, okay, I'm relaxed, and it's like, no, you're not. Your brain is just going.
So do you hook that? Because right now what I see is a headband that kind of curls around your ears.
Right. So it's a headband.
Do you have like in the moment reading? Do you have to plug it into your computer to see?
This particular one uses Bluetooth. So there's no physical connection that I have to make. It'll connect to my phone for the app they have. Uh-huh. Also, they have the, I was able to find some software. There's a lot of open software out there that is, or open source software, sorry.
Yeah.
Where you can actually go through and pull the signal from here, hook it up to the computer, and monitor. They gave you some tools for that as well. Mm. But there was some, they unofficially had made a module which allowed you to connect into an open source project, which I think was really cool. I cannot remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Huh.
That's nice. So you can watch kind of what your brain is doing.
Huge experiments with this software. I thought it was really neat. And I'll post a link when I remember the name of it tied to the story. But basically, it allows you to take the input signal. You can correlate it to, like, say, playing movies or audio files. And you can actually, in real time, everything stays in sync. So you know if you have a trigger in a movie and you're trying to do an experiment to see how your brain reacts at a particular point, you know when you're measuring that. And you can feed into it. It's all digital, but you literally drag and drop objects, and you can connect the output from the EEG into some transform, so you can do some analysis on the signal itself or filter it down to the particular brainwaves you're trying to look at or bands. And then you can feed that into an oscilloscope, or you can feed that to an output file. You can feed that out to a network stream out to the internet.
Fast Fourier transforms.
Ooh. Yes.
I like this. This sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds like this hours of amusement. So we're going to put a link at least to the device.
Oh, yeah, I'll put a link to
GeekSpeak so people can find out more. And as you
stuff
remember
the
those
project,
other links,
yeah.
We'll put those up on the website also, geekspeak.org. Well, let's talk about analog technology that's gotten quite good. Or that perhaps has been good the whole time?
Well, it's analog, but
testing our recent efforts?
But it actually does go back to the digital world again. Hemp.
Oh, sure. A popular topic in this area of the
yes,
world.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
According to certain members of the community in Santa Cruz, hemp can do your laundry. It can...
It gets the lipstick stains out of your collar.
Yeah, right.
It slices, it dices.
Well, it turns out that it's better than graphene at making supercapacitors.
Now, graphene is?
Graphene is a organization of carbon atoms in a two-dimensional sheet.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's a matrix of carbon where it's just, they're laying down as though you lay down a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. It's one atom thick.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to most molecules, carbon-based molecules or molecules in general that end up more in three dimensions. One pokes out and, you know, off into the z axis. And at any rate.
And it's strong, even though it's one atom thick.
It is very strong, but one of the reasons why it's become so interesting is that it conducts electricity extremely well.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Hemp fiber can conduct electricity?
As it turns out, they cooked some groups cooked cannabis bark, which you got from the hemp, not the cannabis sativa, the other
the
kind,
bark.
The industrial stuff, into carbon nanosheets and built the supercapacitors that are on par with the graphene that's made in an industrial setting, except they did it for 1/1000th the cost.
Oh.
And it performs better. Now, what are supercapacitors for? Capacitors in general, they're like batteries, except they're instead of being chemical-based, they're purely electrical, and they can take electricity very fast, and they can give it out very fast. Unlike a battery, usually that has to meter out how fast it can be charged and how fast it can deliver that charge and or that current. And So what a supercapacitor is doing is it has the ability to charge and discharge very fast like a capacitor, but it also has a capacity, no pun intended, to hold a charge that's more on par with a battery like what you would have for a car.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Means that you could have something that would, in some instances anyway, supplement or even replace a battery for a car and be able to give out that huge current in order to push the mass of a car around. But you could also have it take back that energy that comes from regenerative braking or from you plug into your house and having – or to a gas station and have it send out all of that current all at once to be able to charge your car very quickly.
Wow. Wow, that's really cool.
Thanks, Hemp.
And you can learn more about it at our website after the show.
Great. Okay. So, yeah, just keep an eye on that website because it's a font of all kinds of information and also misery. We're going to post a video of a hapless Comcast customer. Right? Isn't that such a
YouTube
thing?
Yes, we are. A customer that, we've been talking about some horror stories with Comcast. Well, it turns out this has been a banner week with Comcast horror stories. This one particular customer wanted to cancel, and he was put on hold. And because of all the stories that have been going around, he thought, maybe I should make a video of this so that I'll have some record just in case something goes wrong.
Cool.
Sure enough, something went wrong.
So he recorded the whole thing.
Yep. And so he gets transferred around to a few places and going, okay, we're going to transfer you to some place that's going to disconnect your service. And he's on hold for 3 hours. And then is wondering, like, is anyone going to get back to me? So on another line, on another phone, he calls back to Comcast and gets a message, sorry, office hours are closed. You can call. They had closed down and left him on hold. While trying to cancel a service.
That's so miserable. I mean, we sort of suspected they were using that, like, you want to cancel your service? Now you're going to be on hold for an hour, but if you were calling to upgrade something, it would take you far less time.
Now you'll be on hold for 14 hours.
But they'll actually just leave you overnight in the elevator. It's kind of like, hello?
Let me out.
All right, so don't trust Comcast. That's an old lesson.
It's just this whole, it's just... You can't make these stories up. Like, what's the worst possible consumer, you know,
experience,
service?
Yeah,
that
like
you
something
could
out of
come up with.
Terry Gilliam's Brazil. Yeah. Hello.
Except with Terry Gilliam's Brazil, the folks showed up on time.
Did they? Yeah. That's true.
They just had to fill out the whatever the number was. Stroke Z.
Stroke Z. Brazil. Well, let's see. What'll make me feel hopeful about the
world? Well, actually, just as a follow-up, Comcast...
Yeah, I'm like, I need a chaser.
None of my articles.
I know. I think there's no hope. It's just misery from here.
Comcast had charged a customer with these extra fees that he wasn't due, and he had talked to Comcast in the past saying, hey, I got these charges. Like, oh, this totally isn't your fault. We'll get these handled.
Sure.
And then Comcast came back and saying, no, you're liable for these charges. You guys already told me you weren't. No. You're liable for these charges. So he had to play back the recording he made of that conversation because we've all now become so shell-shocked by Comcast. We're recording the conversations now. And they're like, oh, right. I guess we did say that.
So there is a helpful note to the consumer. Just record everything.
Just record. Because they're saying, we're going to record this for quality purposes. Maybe you should be recording for quality purposes as well.
Yeah, wow. Okay. You may be the more effective recorder for quality.
Although for legal purposes, you should let them know that you're recording.
Yeah, that's a good point.
At least in California.
So when they pick up the phone, you can say this call is being recorded for.
Wherever you're calling in and the company says, note that you may be recorded for quality purposes, chances are you will also be legally required to tell the person, I am recording this for for quality purposes.
That's a good guide. Okay, mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm. So when planning to record your frustrating consumer interactions, keep that in mind.
Can you just tell the voice... electronic voice that there. I mean, it's an electronic voice telling you that.
It's my bot will talk to your bot. Oh my gosh! Now, Alex, I'm going to ask you something because it does kind of seem to me that the FBI might already consider drones a tool that they can't do without.
Oh yeah,
but apparently there's a plan to make that so.
Yeah. Well, and this is not a huge surprise, I don't think, to anybody who's been paying attention to what the government is doing.
It's the closest thing I have to Unicorn Chaser because, of course.
Yeah. I mean, with all the information that comes out about what the NSA is doing and the police, I'm sure, are looking at drones as well. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to surveillance, the FBI probably takes the cake for domestic surveillance. And hopefully only in warranted situations and such like that. And when I mean warranted, I mean actually got a warrant, not that they feel it's necessary.
Well, no, that's where the word comes from, yes. Warranted, that it is warranted. Yeah.
Yes, but I mean legally warranted. So anyway, they are looking at drones being one of their main tools for the same purposes that, you know, went over. You're able to track all sorts of information. You should be able to do facial recognition. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you can add more devices. And if you've seen some of the drones today, they get pretty monstrous in size.
Oh, do they? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Some get to be a good, 4 feet wide.
If one has a problem over a populated area and falls, it could kill a person easily.
Yeah,
Let's
just cheer, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah, and I mean, and
that's one of the reasons. Well, that's one of the reasons why the FAA has said, like, you're not allowed to run these outside of certain conditions.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So, but I mean, when they're just a certain, not very high up, you can't hear them. So they're there. Nobody thinks to look up at whether some drone is up there, and even if it is, you don't know if it's looking at you or just generally out there patrolling.
Right.
So it's an interesting step that we see the government is ready to take and starting to take more, even domestically, because that's the FBI's domain.
I'm sure there'll be safety in some dim corner of your household, dear listener. that might be free of all sorts of surveillance.
Some windowless room.
Hackery.
Not if you listen to my stories.
My goodness. Work up that Adobe. Should we have an update? That SpaceX has been trying to have some kind of place to launch their stuff.
Yes.
And it's sort of a push-pull with
SpaceX. SpaceX in general has been actually taking up the slack for a lot of areas where our own space program has been falling down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff that supplies have been going up for the ISS and things like that have been done by SpaceX. Mm-hmm. Well, they're actually hitting a fair amount of red tape from Congress. There are three House members that have sent a memo to NASA demanding that the agency investigate why SpaceX is having a, quote, epidemic of anomalies.
Ah, okay.
When, in fact, SpaceX actually has a really good record in terms of launches, and when they have problems, they fix them sometimes within an hour.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're actually doing better than the public contractors were doing.
An epidemic
of... So it's a bit of a wife-beater question. Why are you screwing up so bad? There's no way to answer, but I'm not screwing up.
Just so happens that the representatives in the House that are complaining about this also have contracts with companies that have NASA contracts in their districts
in those states,
that are building up the I believe it's called the ALA or ASA. I've forgotten the name of the replacement for the shuttle.
Okay. So they're working on their own efforts and don't want SpaceX to take their thunder.
Well, right. SpaceX is probably way ahead of them.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
SLS, that was it.
Way ahead of them.
Yeah.
Like launching vehicles.
Yeah, the space launch system.
Not
yeah.
launching vehicles at all.
Yeah, right. I know with some of the recent tensions with Russia, we don't have the option of using their vehicles.
Well,
currently.
We still do. That we actually still, hasn't been that bad, hearing from NPR about this. But
yeah, what's going on? Because there was...
Well, there are tensions between our countries, but the space programs are still...
they're still talking.
Yeah, and the ISS is not owned by any particular country. And so even when we've had some tensions in the past, they've just partitioned off, and it's been annoying, but it hasn't stopped actual collaboration.
Yeah, it seems
right,
like...
But we need to be... I mean, the thing is that they're looking at it as you need to be prepared for that possibility.
That's true.
And
that's
we don't have an option right now.
Yeah, and without the space shuttle, the ability to launch stuff has been severely degraded.
Mm-hmm. Removed entirely.
Well, no, we still have the Russians right now. It's just been degraded.
Well, that's true. But we can't launch our own stuff, is I guess what I'm saying.
Right.
We can have someone else launch our stuff.
Or we can pay Elon Musk to launch stuff on the SpaceX rockets.
Mm-hmm. Now, admittedly, Geek Speak does to appear to be like an official Elon Musk fanboy show.
Yes.
but would it also be true that the general Geek Speak stance would be yay SpaceX and frankly yay any effort to get us
SpaceX
up there?
SpaceX has been doing it for cheaper and they've been launching faster and they've been developing their curve for improvement has been so much faster. It's hard for me to not be a fanboy.
And similar with Tesla.
Yeah.
They've just been doing so much good.
Well, guys, I guess that's it. That's another fine Geek Speak show. Lots of good stuff at geekspeak.org, including a link to a humor piece about trying to keep your passwords current. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission. And Geek Speak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so use our stuff any way you like, but just tell them the geeks say hi. This has been Geek Speak for August 16th. 2014, and this is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, live online at kusp.org. Thank you so much for being here, and do go to geekspeak.org to learn more about all the stories we talked about today on Geek Speak. Thanks so much.